You're all welcome tonight, and can I in particular welcome Amar this evening, Mr. Hussein. You're very welcome, and thank you very much for coming to join us this evening. I think we'll all introduce ourselves, because this is actually Amar's first day visit to our meeting. So if I start, Amar, I'm Angela Loughran, and I'm chair of the committee. And on my left is...
Hi, I'm Jim Dean, Democratic Services at the Council.
I'm Gareth Jones, I'm not a member of this committee. But I'm substituting for somebody else who I don't know.
That's all
right. You're substituting for two people, right? Roy James, I'm from Swinton.
I'm Mike Smith, I'm the cabinet member for Bridgewater.
Ian Foran, St Michael's and Stoneford.
Right, so that's us, so thank you very much, members. And if we in fact look at the minutes of the 27th of July, I hope you've all read them and you can all, one of you at least can.
They are a very good read, I submit.
Right, and can I have a seconder to that? Right, so that's Roy and Peter. So I will sign them whenever Jim gives me a copy of them. Right, thank you. And we will then actually look at the internal audit progress report.
Sorry to interrupt, Chairman.
Apologies.
Do the apologies. We've got apologies from Councillor Dodson, who I understand Councillor Gareth Jones is subbing for, and also apologies from Councillor Nixon, who hasn't appointed a sub for tonight.
Right, thank you very much. Could I ask colleagues to try and make sure that you do have substitutes come to the meeting? It does help if we do have substitutes, thank you very much, especially whenever it's an important committee meeting. So please try and encourage substitutes, thank you. And then if we in fact move on to the officer's report, item number 3A, and of course Chief Internal Auditor and Risk Manager Stephen is giving his apologies for this evening, but we're very grateful to Judith. Judith has come along. And she's going to substitute for quite a few people tonight. Thank you very much, Judith.
Thank you, Chair. I probably won't do as good a job of it as Stephen would do, but I'll do my best.
I think you'll all need to speak up because the Mayor seems to have some colleagues or visitors next door.
This report is a summary of the work of internal audit from the 1st of April to the 30th of September, so the first 6 months of this year. I'm not going to dwell on the covering report. If I could ask you all to turn to Appendix 1, I will start our way through from then. So that starts on page 6. So you will see that we've got 22 audits in total scheduled for the year, and at this point in the year, we've got 7 reports completed to the draft stage and 3 reports that are in progress. On a simple basis, that shows us as just being below 50% of the audit plan at this point in the year. But in reality, we don't have an even profile of our audit work throughout the year. A lot of our work tends to get completed later in the year. So at this point in the year, neither Stephen or I are concerned about the work that's been completed or is in progress. The next table on that page kind of shows the assurances that we've given for the 7 pieces of completed work. So 4 of those have got partial assurance, 2 have got substantial, and 1 we haven't given an assurance on, and that's because the scope of the work that we were able to do on that was quite limited, we weren't able to do enough, and we'll touch on that in a minute. So if we move on to Appendix 2, and that goes through in a little bit more detail, the assurances for each of the audits and sets out the kind of key areas of concern on those. So I'll just touch on those briefly. In terms of the leisure contract, the open book and recovery arrangements, our concern at the audit, at the point we did the audit, was that they hadn't established at that time the independent verification process for the information that we are expecting from the contractor Freedom. Now I do need to be clear that we did that quite early, so I'm hoping that since the audit that they've now started to put those arrangements in place. But at the time, that kind of limited what we were able to do. In terms of tree management, there were two key issues there. Firstly, that the work isn't always being carried out in line with the agreed timescales. And you'll note that there's some slippage, there's some works that were identified back in 2015 that have yet to be completed. And then secondly, the work that is being done isn't always being updated on a timely basis on the system. Either the operatives aren't putting the information on, or the office staff are closing jobs, which they believe have been completed, but without actually checking there is concern that the database isn't entirely accurate on that. Moving on to the next one, staff expenses. In reality, they're all kind of fairly common and minor issues in terms of the staff expenses audit. It's not uncommon to find that VAT receipts aren't on there as they're supposed to be, and that they've not provided all the relevant details, but you know, we still have a duty to report on those, and hopefully they'll be addressed. In terms of cloud strategy and security, the main issues there was the policy hadn't been updated since 2015, and then there was some concerns around the lack of detail around performance and progress monitoring and addressing the issues that have been raised. And I'm sure that people will be delighted to answer any technical questions on that one. The next two have got substantial assurance, so no comments on those. And then the last one was the one that I referred to, that we haven't been able to do enough work just yet. And that was on the customer transformation, the customer relationship management system, the replacement for that. Yeah, I mean, work has moved on because that's one of my projects, so work's moved on since then, but at that point there wasn't enough there for the team to audit, so they will go back and revisit that one later in the year. The appendix 3 just sets out the three further audits that are in progress, that we're looking to report on those at this point, and then we have done those follow-ups in the first 6 months of the year, so I'll say that sets out the progress we've made so far. We have to do a demo to answer any questions you might have.
What I intend doing, members, is going through page by page if you would like to make any comments or ask any questions. Now, if you note, we're about to have an update from the Head of Technology after the Internal Audit Progress Report. I don't know, Peter, would you prefer to actually come to the table, and then if anyone does in fact have any questions relative to our Internal Auditor's Report, then perhaps you would give the answers instead of us expecting Judith to try and give us them. So are you happy with that, members?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So if we then, we're beginning with page 3, please. Has anyone got anything they want to question on page 3? Could I just ask a question, a general question there, Judith? And it's in 4.1. where we say that the system of internal controls, and they're saying that management are responsible for the control environment and should set in place policies, procedures and controls to help ensure the system is functioning appropriately. And can we have that assurance, you know, have management got those in place?
Yes, Chair, I can provide general assurance that, you know, in all of the council systems and processes there is a framework there of controls, documented policies, processes, and the work that Audit does then goes out and verifies that they're there. So any lapses you'll find will be where there are gaps in that framework or whether it's not being applied correctly in practice. So that's our work throughout the year, is we'll keep coming back and reaffirming on specific areas that those arrangements are in place. But yes, I can give you general assurance that we do have a control process.
That's good, thank you for that. Anything on page 4 that anyone wanted to raise? Page 5. Page 6.
Chair, okay.
Gareth.
Is it usual, Chair, can I ask, is it usual to have less than 50% progress or completed? Is it because they were timed to be like that, or is it because of the impact of COVID, or why is it that it's so relatively low?
Chair, if I can, we don't have an even profile throughout the year, and in fairness I couldn't tell you how that compares to this point last year, I've got that to hand. But I will say that it's very typical for us to complete more of our work in the last 6 months of the year. That's partly just the way we schedule them, the fact that we have staff on leave, kind of over that summer period, that it kind of, you know, performance can be a little bit lower in the first 6 months and then we'll pick up in the last 6 months of the year. Yes, we've got a few issues in terms of COVID, but nothing significant. You know, the team are well averse now in terms of being able to either, you know, conduct remote teams meetings, or we are having staff back on site and going out and visiting people where that's possible to do. So it's not having a huge impact on our performance. I say it's more just a profiling, and I would expect that to increase significantly as we go through into quarter 3.
So we're looking at a report that covers April 21 to March 22.
Yeah, no, it's covering, this is only the 6 months to date, isn't it, Judith? So this in actual fact is
where
April.
Where it says 21 to 22.
Yeah, but it's only, that is the audit, that was the plan that was put in place from April 21 to April 22. And what we're actually getting is where we are in that plan, and we're actually talking about from April, and it's to the end of September.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
but there's
it's
only,
6 months.
There's only three in progress, that says. So
that
of the 23 that were in the plan, this
and
says that at the end of September, there was only 10 in process.
Yeah. There are only seven that have actually been completed to a draft.
I'm adding the seven of the three.
Yeah. So only 10 are either being dealt with. In fact, they're all being dealt with, aren't they? Because if it's only to draft, we've only got 10 of 23. So it's not really quite 43%, is it? 10%, 10 of... Well, it probably is. Yeah.
Yes, Chair, that is correct, and as I say, we will expect to see more delivered. So I'm not worried that we haven't completed 50% at this point, because we don't have necessarily an even profile of how the audits are completed. As I say, we tend to find the staff take more time off during the summer, which kind of lowers the days that we've got available, but they tend to be then more productive in the last.
Would you expect it to be 100% at the end of March?
We would like to think that. We desperately hope that's going to be the case.
I have to be honest and say, typically we tend to be around the 90% mark in terms of delivery. There's always something that kind of slips, doesn't quite go to planning, finalising some of these things. So I would expect it to be around the 90, hopefully just slightly over by the end of the year.
Yeah. So, in fact, if I had to say to you, how does that compare with the report we had in July?
Chair, I couldn't compare it to the July one because that was a full one for the whole year. Have to go back to sort of this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
I can have a look. I'll ask Stephen to go back through the last couple of years and see how our report to this point in the year compares, so that you can have it for the last couple of years compared to this one.
Ian, you had your hand up.
I did have a point, but I think it's been covered because it was the one about the situation at the end of the year and what you expect to be covered by that. I hope for 100%, but I can understand the 90, I suppose. I think it's covered, Chair.
You think it's been covered? Any other, Peter?
Just a general query, really, reading through the entire report. There's lots of places where we're not doing what we should be doing or being done late or whatever. I wonder, basically, what proportion of it is caused by staff being missing for one reason or another again? Roughly, we're talking a large percentage, a small percentage.
Through you, Chair, it would be difficult to even put a figure on whether COVID's had much of an impact on it, but typically on any audit we do, we will find something that's not quite being done as we would expect it to be. To a greater or lesser degree, when you see some audits that have got substantial assurance, it doesn't mean to say they're all perfect, but we've not found any significant findings. The ones that we specifically draw to the committee's attention have perhaps got a bit more substance to them, a bit more concern. But that is not uncommon, it's rare, unless you're sort of in those sectors where 100% perception is absolute because it's a life or death situation, you will always find things that.
We're councillors, we don't always get 100% ourselves. No, sorry, Chair, just so I thought.
That's okay.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Somebody brought it up. To a non accountant, the reading is a bit frightening sometimes.
Yeah. Carry on, Jim.
I wouldn't say that there's anything that was a particular surprise in terms of the scope of the types of accidents. Particularly when you look at the mileage one, that's typical. At any time you would do an expenses audit, you will find receipts haven't been attached. For whatever reason, these things happen. But the amount we spend on mileage claims, and that will reduce significantly over the last 18 months. It wasn't significant before, so anything we're talking about, they're not going to be huge sums of money that involve. A little bit more concerning when you look at the trees audit and some of those works haven't been followed through. But again, we're probably only talking a small number that haven't been followed through. The vast majority of the work would have been done, but of course, it's our duty to point out where things haven't gone as they should have done.
I'm still dealing with page 6, and what I wanted to say, Judith, is this one where it's either not applicable, That gives me cause for concern, and I'm assuming that you're referring to page 4. If you look back at page 4, where one piece of work was issued where it was not applicable, and we weren't able to give any kind of assurance whatsoever. And that, as we say, it's for the pension testing on behalf of Staffordshire County Council. First thing I wanted to ask about that was incomplete the actual audit, or what was the problem there?
Chair, firstly, can I offer an apology? I should have picked it up when I presented the report. The reference to the pensions work is actually an error. It shouldn't be in that box at all. I think that relates to a previous audit report when we have done the pensions testing at the end of the year, and it's the one audit where we've not given an opinion. So if they ignore that, we have asked you to correct it in the one on the website will be the correct version. So in actual fact, the one audit that we haven't done sufficient work to be able to give an opinion is the one that relates to the customer transformation and the replacement of the customer relationship management system. And that's only because when we started the work, the project wasn't sufficiently advanced for us to be able to do enough work to give an opinion on it. It's not a criticism of where the project's at, it's not a failing in the audit, it's just a reflection of circumstance. So we'll revisit that project when more work has been done to be able to give an opinion later in the year.
So you can assure me we haven't been wasting our time on the pension?
No, the pensions audit actually will be done later in the
year. Because I had actually wondered, did Staffordshire County Council pay us to do that work? And what was the problem that, we're now seeing that we can't give any kind of assurance whatsoever?
No, I mean, traditionally we don't give an opinion to the committee. It's a piece of work that the county asks us to do every year on pensions. We have to do it, they ask us to, and we do it, but we don't give an opinion the same way. We're providing assurance to them rather than to ask that on that one.
Right, okay, thanks for that, Judith. And then moving on to page 7. Any questions from page 7?
Did I miss? Did you say that the comment about the trees?
No, we're coming to that now, Gareth. Yeah,
but did you mention trees before?
Yes.
Yeah, I missed it. What did you? Can you just say what you said?
Pretty much what's in the report, if I'm honest. Yes, there have been some issues and some concerns around trees, that the works aren't always being carried out in line with the timescales that we would have expected them to have been done. But as I kind of answered in response to another question, the vast majority will have been done in line with it, but of course you're always going to be exceptions, and we report by exceptions, so we're reporting on the cases we found that didn't meet those requirements.
So the situation is not worse than it was in previous years?
I couldn't say that, because we don't do this audit every year, so I wouldn't have a year-on-year comparison for that one, but at the point we did it, we found some things that concerned us, because they haven't been done, and in particular, we found things that hadn't been done that related to the 2015 tree survey. There's actually been another tree survey since then. There was one also done in 2019. They may be the only things that weren't done in that year that the audit team happened to find. There may be more than maybe missing out. I think we only do a small sample when we test.
Bearing in mind the importance of trees these days, that is perhaps something of a bit of a concern.
Yeah. Ian, I'll bring you in. Is it to do with the tree survey?
No.
Well, I wanted to comment on the tree survey, like Gareth, and it does give me concern, real concern, that we're actually talking about the tree survey of 2015. And I would like to know, which department is actually responsible for this. First of all, is there an outside contractor involved with our tree strategy, or is it Street Scene that are dealing with that?
I might stand to be correct on it. I think in the main, it's provided in house through the Street Scene service. In terms of any sort of tree works that are undertaken, but the actual tree survey, I think that is something that's done by a contractor. So they have someone come in and does all the surveys, says what works need to be done, and then the works in the main will be dealt with in-house. It wouldn't surprise me though if there aren't certain more specialist works that the in-house team wouldn't have the equipment for that they may well bring in. But I'd have to get a definitive off the manager for that.
Yeah, I think actually, it does give cause for concern, Judith, the fact that the system is not being updated. Now, there must actually be a slip somewhere in the system, you know, either somewhere in the operations department, there's someone or somebody falling down in keeping that system up to date. Now, it's not so very long ago where we were involved with quite a serious case with a tree, and I think, you know, it really is very concerning if we are not keeping our system up to date, and I think that we really ought to be registering our concern. We wouldn't be doing our work as an audit committee if we didn't register our concern.
I agree.
Sorry, Chair. If I can assure members that as part of our routine work, we will be going back and doing a follow-up audit anyway, as a matter of course. So you will be able to give you an update when we've done that work to let you know the progress that's been made. Peter and I were just debating whether it was an in-house officer or not. I think it's contractual, but I'll come back and clarify that as well.
I wonder then if you could actually, who in fact could you register our concern with? Is it a cabinet member, or is it a cabinet member and that department, or could you in fact let that department know we're concerned?
I'm more than happy to write to the head of service and express the committee's concern around that particular audit.
How do members of the committee feel about that? Do you feel that you would like?
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
It doesn't read that well, paragraph, I don't think, but it needs registering.
Right, can I have the committee members show their hands in support of that? That's unanimous. Judith, can I ask you please if you would write to the head of service and register our concern? Can I also ask the cabinet member to take on board our concern there, please?
Yeah, I think this will come under environment, cabinet. I think whenever you do an audit, you're always bound to find things that are not right. That's the whole purpose of the thing. But I quite agree with you that in light of the serious accident that happened on the old railway line, if it was a serious problem with the tree, then it should be dealt with. What I would like to see is whether these particular faults that were found were what I would class as serious defects when they were found. Because normally when you do an examination, you find things which are serious defects, minor defects, or whatever. If these were serious defects and had not been attended to, then it would be very serious. But if they're just minor things, then you perhaps understand why an operator has not finished the job off properly. So it would be interesting to know, or I think we should know, the extent of the problem on those particular trees that were not dealt with.
But I think, you know, it's worthwhile actually. If you'll do that for us, Judith, that would be very helpful. Right? Thank you very much for that. The leisure contract, Ian.
I don't know if I was alone on this, but I was quite alarmed to read this. Firstly, because of the importance of that contract and the amount of monies involved, but also because of the discussions that have taken place at council about it. And it seems to me almost incredible that a verification process hadn't been put in place and carried out. And I believe you said, Judith, that it's been resolved now and something has been put in place. But if I understand things correctly, that's quite a big hole, isn't it, to drop into.
Chair, if I can just clarify, I can't be 100% at this point it has, because I think that it had by now. I think it was just the timing issue. We went in very early in the year to look at that, and it hadn't been established at that point. I'd like to think, and again, I can check that. I mean, it's something we'll routinely follow up and, you know, report back to the committee when we've done the follow-up, whether that's now in place and how effective it is in practice. And that, you know, that's kind of our concept.
I think, though, that really, if it's being reported to the committee this week, then we are entitled to voice our concern. You know, that there isn't, because although that's coming under the head of service of operations, could this in actual fact be something to do with the partnerships or contracts?
It is the contract, Chairman, and what happened here was we had an agreement to have an open book policy with Freedom, and our most senior officer, Emma Pulliger, was delegated to look at their paperwork and their figures. Now, we can't get anybody higher than, well, we could have had the 1.51,
right.
But Emma was the one. And I suppose at the outset that would have been thought to be sufficient. But as the auditors have said, you really do need somebody else as well to independently verify what's been found. And Judith has just said this was on early on, so she's fairly confident, I think, that somebody has been appointed to oversee what was done or to check what was done.
Yeah, I won't make a definite until we do the follow-up audit, but I find it hard to imagine that at this point in the year that wouldn't have been rectified.
Yeah, but if you just check and let us know, Judith, that would be very helpful, and it would be helpful if the Cabinet Member did that as well, please.
For you, Chair, I think the important thing there is that the process is understood and embraced by people working internally, isn't it? Because it's the independent verification Mike's talking about that's missing. Understand better now that somebody hadn't understood that that was necessary. Clearly, there's a trigger somewhere.
Yeah.
I think as well, Chair, it takes time sometimes to settle these things, to be clear about what they're going to check.
Yes.
You won't check everything that Freedom can do.
No, we know that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Where you're going to take your assurances from and what's relevant to what isn't, and that will fall across both the finance team and the operations team, the contract manager for it. So,
yeah.
But I'll raise that.
If you raise that issue with finance and operations, please, and now the Cabinet Member will do a concern.
I'll check it out, Chairman. I think Emma is one of those people who is really good at the detail.
Oh, yes, we know that. Yes. Okay, that's fine. Are you all happy with that page then? We'll move on to page 8. Roy, please.
Can I just make sure that our recorder has actually submitted his form with all the receipts? Fine. Can I make a suggestion then? If people don't submit their receipts, that they don't get paid. Simple as that. That's what happens in commercial environment. If you don't submit your receipt, you don't get reimbursed.
I would like to see, apart from anything else, how can the Borough Council claim the VAT back on that if they don't have receipts to prove that that petrol has been bought? And if they are actually claiming the VAT back without receipts, is there any chance that that's not really legal?
Firstly, I think some of this has come about because we've had to change and adapt our processes during COVID. So car mileage claims are now submitted online. And it's not that easy to attach the receipt. So that the idea is the manager, when they sign the form, they verify they've got the receipts and they're supposed to hold them locally.
Yeah.
When it goes over to payroll, all payroll get is the form and they will assume that the manager has done their job in checking the receipts there. So it's going to be quite hard for us to stop them. If it gets to payroll, there's nothing really they can do. They'll take the form at face value and process it. It's a requirement really to remind the managers that they're supposed to check that the receipts are there and they shouldn't be authorised in passing that form for payment unless they're there. I think we've just got some teething issues in changing those processes. Ultimately, I think we want to have a more sophisticated system for submitting those forms. To say it's more of a spreadsheet and a scanned form at the moment. I think over the next year or so, we'll be looking to have a proper bespoke form. Peter, I think going to help you with that one.
It is quite difficult to do this because some of these are petrol receipts, and of course they're not specifically for the journeys made.
No.
So it's just the general petrol receipt that you're submitting, which is a bit odd, but it can be done. It's just the process doesn't fit together. No, it's not just that.
This possibly even is linked in with the first statement there, Judith, if I can comment there and say the forms between the two councils are inconsistent. Now, I would imagine that that must lead to a bit of a difficulty for those who are working with these expenses. Now, that's obviously someone who is in finance. And sometimes when we talk about shared services, you know, that is fine. But, you know, maybe some of them are still needing a bit better refinement to them, because it would certainly make life an awful lot easier for the admin staff if everybody was filling in the same, you know, the same expenses sheet. I mean, you don't need rocket science to see that if you're all submitting it to... Can IT help with that, maybe?
If I can just explain that, because we've now changed the processes, the form that actually goes to payroll is now the same, it's just the spreadsheet. It's the originating documents to go to managers, and those managers are either staff of managers or kind of managers, so they're used to seeing their forms. They're not significantly different in format to cause any huge challenges, but yes, it is one of those ones that ideally we would look to kind of align at some point, and preferably with a digital one rather than a paper one. So I think that's where we're heading to resolve that one. But then we've got an interim position on it at the moment, which has moved us part way there, which is not all the way there.
Yeah. Right, Judith, that's fine. The other points on here are really that, you know, on our appendixes here really are dealing with IT. And before you start asking questions about that, I think we should just, you know, mention the economic growth strategy, because that does in fact have a substantial assurance. So, and there's no running commentary for that, because obviously audit is quite pleased with the economic growth strategy. Are we right there, Judith?
Yes, Chair.
Have you any comments you want to make about that? I mean, there are no recommendations, it just seems that everything there was everything in the garden rosy.
if I can just caveat it though, it will be that there's a strategy there, or the audit will not comment on the quality or what's in the strategy, it's just that they have one and they're operating within the terms. That's all audit's remit is, so that's the level of assurance I have to give you on that one. But yes, that they haven't planned anything significant to bring to the committee's attention.
Right then, and anything else then on page 8 that anyone wanted to raise?
Are we going to comment on the cloud strategy and security?
Well, I think, you know, that you generally do comment on this type of thing, and I would hate the head of technology to think that we've got him here under false pretenses, Roy, that we never ever ask any questions about IT. He would be bitterly disappointed that he's not sitting at home probably watching football tonight. He's had to come here and listen to all what you're going to say to him. So, fire away.
Not updated since 2015. What's the progress on that one?
You need to speak up for me, because I don't always hear everything that people are whispering.
I've got a quiet voice as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so the strategy should have been updated 2 years ago. I was in the process of doing that. I got partway through it, and then lockdown happened, and the nature of what we were doing with IT changed. It increased for the better, which is good. And so I've not completed it quite yet, but I've got drafts for it. What I mean. But yeah, there's lots of changes I've made in the light of doing something radically different with IT.
When do you expect to have that completed?
I set a date, and I think that's May 2022. Part of it has already gone through the process through leadership team.
Okay. And then the second part, not complete performance progress monitoring.
So this is a fairly new thing. The person auditor referring to Microsoft scoring, which is a fairly international scoring on security, and we've not used it to its fullest extent yet, but we are doing that. And get basically points for different security levels you get to. And one of the biggest ones we're going for now that adds to our security rating is multi-factor authentication, which you know you've all come up against in the last couple of weeks. And so that increases our score hugely. So yeah, we are looking at that, but we've not completed it on the audit as of yet.
What effect is Windows 11 going to have on this?
Any new version of laptop operating systems generally comes with better security. So we would hope that Windows 11 comes with newer security to combat the newer threats that we're getting. So it will be a positive effect.
So are the laptops we're being issued with, are they going to be able to upgrade to Windows 11? Some will not, of course.
Yes. Yes.
Fully upgrade?
They'll be able to use Windows 11.
Yep.
Windows 11 comes with all sorts of whizzy things,
yep,
including graphics.
Yep.
So for the older ones, we might have to tone that down. I think that's what everybody's thinking about across the world.
With was it McAfee now being bought out by somebody? Is that
we use Panda?
Oh,
okay. That's been bought out by WatchGuard, and we're already a WatchGuard. WatchGuard is a manufacturer of firewalls, so we have now an antivirus that matches in with our firewall.
Okay.
It's not a great advantage, but it's just the two work together.
Is that you?
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Any members with any other questions to do with that? And that's covering the customer transformation and CRM replacement project as well. That's the technology. All right. Why do we have on here that the services are led by Cannock's District Council, as opposed to why are you not saying led by Stafford Borough Council? Why are we being told that this service, it's as if we are sort of second league, so to speak, Stafford Borough Council second league, because it's Cannock's is actually you're leading it, and we're the underdogs.
Sorry, Chair, that's not the intention. We merely use the asterisk to indicate those services that aren't run by a Stafford service. If you look at the Cannock reports, you'll see the ones that are led by Stafford and marked as Stafford-led ones and else. We just make that distinction so that you're clear about the, you know, who's responsible for the service. I mean, we're still providing it to staff, but it doesn't really make a difference. If you want us to stop doing that distinction, we can. It's just something we've done ever since we started shared services.
No, but
it feels as though we've now passed that point. We just haven't revisited. So if you'd like us to stop making that distinction, we're more than happy to.
No, I'd like to know how long Stafford Borough Council is going to be the underdog, you know.
I can assure you that it most certainly isn't.
Because I would have thought, you know, that if it's shared service, it's shared service, isn't it? Unless, Peter, are you now operating out of Cannock?
Why are you getting mixed up with that asterisk at the bottom? Because it only relates to governance. It doesn't relate to technology and operations on page
9.
9.
Well, the same would apply there, as governance led by Cannock Chase District Council as opposed to it being a shared service. It's as simple as that. Why have you been told that Cannock Chase is leading on everything?
It's not literally, it's just that one audit. All of the others are entirely Stafford-based audits. They're within within council. It's just that aspect relates to that one, the customer transformation CRM replacement project. And actually it's a joint piece of work between two shared services, one that's Cannock-led and one that's Stafford-led. Peter's leading on it from the technology side. Your customer team here is involved in it, and my customer team at Cannock is involved in it.
So that's Stafford out votes.
Okay, I've made my point.
You do actually on that project.
Okay, I've made my point, all right. That's it. Members, have you any other points you want to raise on this particular item? Because we're coming back to Peter, because we're looking for an update from Peter. So are you all happy then? Can we then, in actual fact, members, can we note this progress report, please? That's what we're being asked to do in the recommendation. Right? So we're noting that report. Right, thank you very much, members. Thank you, Judith. Thank you for that. And then item number 3B is actually for the Head of Technology to give us a verbal update, Peter. So we're all looking forward to that. So the floor is now yours.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think this has resulted some queries you had. Concerns you had at the previous audit and accounts committee, and that was the result of some audits coming as partial and worse, and some of those were marked as high risk areas, and I'd just like to go through some of the high risk areas just to you to get a flavour. So the first high-risk area was that there were some systems, IT systems, that may have been out of the area of the technology shared service that other services of the council were setting up IT systems, and that is a risk. And I highlighted this as a risk and asked for particular audits to be done to go through those systems where people were using IT independently of our guidance. However, there was a head of service in operations who was doing that. He has since left and been replaced, and we've reorganised the parts of his service that were doing independent IT, and they are now part of the technology service. Can I explain this? So when the audit came up, my suggestion was that we really didn't need to do this any further, but you're quite right to say that if that happens, then that would be a high risk. However, it's not an ongoing risk, in my opinion. Okay. Another one was...
We could really have done a presentation here, Peter, so that we're all sort of... We have in front of us more or less what you have, but carry on.
Right, okay. Right. The next high-risk one was that our antivirus wasn't being applied to all the laptops on our asset database. That was quite right. But that was because we were rapidly replacing laptops, giving out laptops because of lockdown. And so there were quite a few laptops left switched off, unable to use the system, locked away in cupboards, and so those didn't have antivirus. All our laptops have antivirus without exception. So although it is a high risk if that happens, they're not, in my opinion, an ongoing risk.
Could you, can I interrupt you then and say to you, Peter, what normally happens to these laptops which you take in, which are no longer being used either by members or by staff, and you're saying that they get locked away in a cupboard? Now, for how long are they locked away in a cupboard, and are they locked away in a cupboard in the state that they are handed over to your department, or is there anything done to those laptops? Because let's, if somebody broke into that cupboard and nicked those, so can you tell us what happens to those laptops that you're collecting in, which are now redundant for want of a better word, other than locking them in a cupboard? How long are they locked in a cupboard
mostly
for?
IT kit is kept securely within the building. Obviously, you have to have a pass to get in the building, etc. And some of those that out of commission are locked away in a cupboard, as you say, and a job desk drawer. But yeah, there's a risk that they could be stolen. And yeah, if we, it's a burglary this council, then yeah, that is a particular risk. However, those laptops have their disks encrypted, so if they took them away, we still can't lose the value of the laptop, of course, of the old laptop. But the data is safe. That is a particular concern rather than the value of the laptop.
So what happens to these laptops that are no longer
right?
And that's what I was at, that's what I was at.
So yeah, we have a company that recycles them. So they recycle the components, generally, they can recycle the entire thing, but normally they've been replaced for a good reason, use them to the end of your life. So yeah, because the disk is encrypted, we use it for the nail through disk, basically, before having it over, but we don't do that anymore, we're comfortable with the quality of the encryption
that's
on the disk.
What can I ask then, what happens to the disk that you have taken out of the laptop? Okay, if the actual laptop itself without the disk in it is being handed over for recycling, what do you do with that disk that comes out of
there? That goes to a recycling company that provides assurance that they're going to recycle it in an acceptable way. It's not the disc we're worried about, it's the way it's going to be recycled. So it's not going to be chucked in landfill or something like that, which you can't do with this equipment. So the company takes that away and deals with that for us.
Could that company access the material that is on that disk?
No.
Why not?
Because it's encrypted.
So I don't understand. I mean, your officer will tell you I'm not very good at IT.
Yeah. It's password protected.
Coded.
Right.
And the data on it is scrambled, so you can't de-scramble it without the password.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. That's reassuring, I think. Right.
Okay. The next thing they pointed out to us was we were using, for a short period of time, home computers that connected into the network that didn't go onto the network. The home computers used a virtual machine when they connected into our networks, see what I mean? So the home computer we used at the start of lockdown, because there weren't enough laptops to go around, worldwide, not just at Stanford. And so we couldn't get hold of them fast enough. It was very difficult to set them up. So it was deemed acceptable that people could use their own computer.
Right.
Given that the way it worked, it wasn't directly connected to the wires of our network.
Right.
It's a fairly technical area that was a risk we accepted at the time, because otherwise we wouldn't have been able to get all our staff working within 3 or 4 days.
So any data that they sucked down,
it doesn't come, the data's all come down.
Right, okay,
it's just picked images. The images don't stay on the machine.
That's
the
point.
Right.
Okay. And that was it as far as high risk issues.
Right. So that in actual fact, where these were all issues that we were concerned about as an audits committee, and I think what we really felt that we needed some assurance that what the problems were, they weren't really big problems, you know, that your department had them under control and they weren't a serious risk to all of the borough council's working, so to speak. Now I want to ask members if they have any other questions that they feel. Peter?
In addition to internal audits, but we've audited more stringently by central government about the security of our networks. And part of that process is we have to pay for a hacker to try and do the worst damage they can. It's a very expensive process. It's about £10,000 a year to do that.
Right.
And the hacker will have a go from outside, and then we'll let him onto the network, and he'll always find something, of course. And that's what—that's a better assurance than we do. We're also applying for another national standard, which is Cyber Essentials Plus, and we've nearly done on that. Already gained the government version of that, which is PSN, and we got that 2 weeks ago.
Right,
so
that's
good. A yearly thing,
and
it's a big thing for us when we attain this.
So I think then we really need to so we need to congratulate you on that, because as I say, I think these are things that we really need to know, because we sometimes feel as an audit committee we take our job seriously, let's put it that way, and therefore we do ask questions.
Yeah.
To try and find out, and we can understand now, yes, you have everything under control, but if things are brought to our attention, then we feel that we've really got to get clarification. Peter, you put your hand up.
I don't always use my, I've got my company laptop at home, which I'm a big, I like it, you call it a desktop thing.
Yeah.
And I go into my borough email thing through your passwords and all that stuff. Mm. Is that a security risk?
It is a bit, I'm afraid. Yes.
Because it means I'll have to get this out and stop using what I'm doing in my office at home.
That's increasingly becoming a risk. And the National Cyber Security Centre are advising against allowing that to work. So, we'll be able to what devices can connect.
So you're suggesting that if I want to look at the emails that have come through the system, I've got to use this machine.
Yep. Which highly advise
that. And then what will happen is that I won't use it as often as I should.
I know.
I won't use the other one. If you say I don't use it, I won't use it. But I mean, so it might be once a week when I look at the emails. It might be something that says my allowance has gone off.
That's your chance.
I mean, that is a really good point, I have to say. It is mentioned in one of the audits as well. in that, yeah, that is the current guidance, that we should be doing that. And I do realise that it reduces usability. At the moment, I don't know whether you use a smartphone to connect to it.
No, I've got a smartphone, I don't need it.
Because we've got ways to segregate the two systems on a smartphone that we don't on.
I know I'm old fashioned, but everybody uses that. So,
Roy, did you want to come in?
Yeah, so are you saying that my home computer, I shouldn't be looking at my emails from Borough?
Yes. I will be back to you about that. Yes, that's the way it's going.
And the same for my phone?
Yeah.
Your phone, we can do tricks with to separate the two sides of its apps. And so that has to be done by a technician.
Just set mine up about an hour ago.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So my home computer, I shouldn't be using to access my. So you're going to give me a laptop then? I ain't got one. I've always used this or my home computer.
Okay. Yes. Undoubtedly. Please contact us.
One laptop, please.
I think this is a very valid point you've made, Peter, and I really don't think that there are very many councillors who realise or appreciate that they should only be accessing Borough Council business on Borough Council equipment.
No, we've not said that yet, but that's the
I know you haven't, but
sure.
You know,
that's
you have said
of our expert, though,
yeah. But you have actually said to us tonight that this is part of the security risk. Are you saying that, or am I?
Yeah.
I would hate to put words into your mouth because God knows you don't need that.
I'm sure the home computer is just fine, but these laptops you get, of course, have the antivirus on, they have firewalls on. We check the firmware, we check that everything's up to date and things like that. So that is a big risk if you don't do that. We don't know. You couldn't guarantee.
So with the laptops, if there's any upgrade on anything, is that done over air, or have we got to bring it in?
Yeah.
Over air?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can do it remotely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's okay. Sure. Sometimes you can't do that and you have to bring things in to have things put in.
I think it depends on what's, you know.
Yeah. We will be improving that process very shortly. But yes, your Microsoft Office will update itself by one or two other things.
You've got my home address. Can you deliver one?
I don't know.
Would you say, Peter, then, that if councillors wanted to have or wanted to access the Borough Council information via an appliance other than a Borough Council issued laptop,
yeah,
or what is the other thing, an iPad,
iPad,
an iPad, iPad, they should actually ask IT to update their own equipment?
No, we can't do that. We can't keep constant tabs on those home devices.
Right.
It's only the
only the Borough issued. Borough issued.
Where we sort of check up on what's going on.
Right.
Not invasively.
Yeah, I was going to say. I think, Chairman, I think you made the point about, I think, general communication to councillors about the way things are going and what recommended practice would be helpful, because I wasn't aware of that.
No, I think there are a lot of.
No, we've not made people aware of that yet, but it will circulate.
We're not doing anything wrong yet.
No,
unless you're a mechanic councillor.
Oh, naturally.
Yes.
Chair, if I can, that's only just because we've just made some changes. We have previously issued our members with equipment, so as we're just rolling that out, we're building Peter's recommendations in. Mm.
So
you will all be treated the same.
We will be on top.
I think.
So if you got one of these at your office that I can pick up now.
We do actually, but we'll order one in specifically for you.
With the initials on the outside.
Yeah.
In gold.
In gold. Yeah.
There is only a handful of councillors and staff that not using corporate.
I think then we've actually all learnt something tonight that we've been quite aware of. I forgot to ask people to turn off their phones. Sorry about that, members. Peter, would you like to continue?
Most important.
Ian, sorry.
Yeah, I'm sure most of us read a lot about naughty cyber criminals, especially groups of them working from a couple of thousand miles east to the northeast of it. What does that mean in terms of our security? I'm assuming we've got things like geo-blocks on. I think that's the case because I was trying to use my equipment when I was overseas for a week. Couldn't get it to work. I came back, I had 146 emails, which wasn't great. But could you tell
really
us whether
good
that's
news that that's working?
I'll test it again for you next time.
Shouldn't go abroad.
Absolutely. So, I mean, A, is there a geo blocking? Do you get around those by using things like the
Yes, they're not foolproof, but yes, generally.
But there's no point in them having that in
it,
expecting to give away the secrets.
that would be possible.
But that's another layer of security.
It is.
Yes.
It is. Yeah. So we sort of block certain countries.
Yeah, and there's no point in actually having that in operation and then us being told how to get around it.
No.
Right, so that's...
Just talk to me, I'll tell you how to do it.
That's fine. So are you finished then, Peter? Do any of you members have anything further you would like to ask?
I was going to say it's a very comprehensive report and I now feel happier than I did during our last meeting where I was wondering whether to just go outside and fall on my sword or just carry on.
Can I therefore, Peter, thank you very much for coming this evening, and I think you know, the members and myself are really appreciative of you giving of your time. To actually be here with us tonight, that's been very, very helpful. Thank you very much.
It was very useful having the discussion about home computers. Yes. It was something I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah. That's very helpful. Now, you're welcome to go home or you're welcome to stay and enjoy the rest of the meeting. It's up to yourself. No hard feelings if you choose to go now.
I can stay.
As long as you don't make a noise when you go. If you don't go now, then that's it. You're here for the rest.
I'll go away in disguise.
All right, good show. Right, have a safe journey home then.
Thanks,
David.
Right. And we're now coming on to the next item in the programme, or on the agenda, and we're actually moving on to item number 3C. And Amar, this is where you're going to come in here, and what I'm going to ask Amar, thank you very much for your patience in waiting for us to get to this item on the agenda. And if you would like to take us through your reports to us, please, where you're actually informing the audit risk assessment for Stafford Borough Council, and we are then looking at that, please. Page 12, we're beginning on. So if we all move to page 12, and the best way to deal with this, I think, is if you take us through it, and then after you've gone through it, I'll go through it page by page for the members to ask any questions you would like to ask on your report. So we're over to you then, please. Thank you.
So it's just an audit progress report, the sector audit. If we just turn towards page 4 of this report, just to summarise in terms of the financial statement audit of where we're at. So members were provided with a detailed audit plan in July 2021. And then since then, we've received our initial inquiry. Since then, we've received our initial inquiry for management. I believe that's the end of this item. And I can confirm there haven't been any significant changes to our audit plan since receiving those inquiries. And then more towards our field work. We commenced our field work of the audit in October this year, and that's currently ongoing. Moving on to our value for money work. On the same item?
Your page 5, our page 15.
15, that's it.
Yeah, that's right. So on value for money, this year it is a new approach, so it's slightly more complex or more involved, and it's trying to make more of an impact as well. The value for money deadline in terms of deliverables is normally 3 months after we've signed the financial statements. In terms of any other areas that we've started on, it's housing benefits, subsidy claim. That work is ongoing right now, and we've made a start on the work for that. If we turn to page 6 of the report, so just results of audit work to date. So this is just a high level overview on three significant risks that we communicate with you in our audit plan. So management of override of controls, we've documented our controls and processes at the council, and our work is currently ongoing in terms of our substantive work for journals testing, that is. In terms of valuation on land and buildings, we've received valuation reports and also the working papers behind those reports. We're currently communicating with the valuer for our initial inquiries on there, just to support their assumptions that they've used in their report. And then lastly, valuation of the pension liability. That work is currently ongoing, and we've received the assurance reports from the auditors of the pension fund that we rely on that report for the controls and processes. And then if we move on to page 7 of this report, just on the audit deliverables. As I mentioned, the audit plan was delivered in July 2021. Audit findings report and the auditor's report is currently planned to be delivered in January 2022. And then moving on from there in April 2022, we're expecting the auditor's annual report to be presented. Following on from that, I'll open up for questions because we've got a sector update which I'll allow members to read through, but if there are any questions, please do let me
know.
Yeah, you.
The one thing that the obvious question is, we've talked about delivery of several documents in January, and it's just to gain the assurance that from your perspective we're on track with that date.
Yeah, so through you, Chair, at the moment our work will be substantive audit is currently ongoing, and we're on track at the moment in terms of audit deliverables, and we're currently liaising with head of governance and management as well to ensure that those deliverables are met.
Jerry, but if I can just add to that, I had a quick conversation with Andrew this afternoon. We've had a catch up, as reported. Yes, that's still the current plan. If anything changes, I will certainly advise the chair of that. And changes in that schedule.
Right. Anything in that any other member would like to raise? Right, so do we want to note there's nothing else you want to draw our attention to in this report, is there?
No, just in terms of for you, Chair, that the member asked about in January the significant number of documents. Audit findings report is one report, and the audit report is more of an opinion that's included in the financial statements. so it's not overly lengthy.
Right, thank you. Right, members, can we in actual fact note this report that they have had presented to us? Right, so we're happy with that, AMAR?
Yeah.
Right, so we're noting the report from AMAR, and we're then moving on then to you again. Please, AMAR, your informed audit risk assessment for Stafford Borough Council. And for us, it's page 27, 28, 29. And if there are any specific items that you want to draw to our attention, any cause for concern, or do you want to just take us through this report?
Chair, I'm happy on this one for members to read the report itself. As I say, these are our initial inquiries that we posed to management, and there were no significant changes on our audit plan to receive these inquiries.
So there isn't anything in this part of your report that you feel you want to draw our attention to?
No, not
even. No. Are these standard questions that you, obviously when you look through these are questions that you have put to our officers and the officers have responded to your questions. Are they standard questions? Do these kind of questions go out to all local authorities?
Yes, Chair. These are standard questions that we've
heard. They're not specific to Stafford Cannock Chase. It's really a sort of format that you have, and there's nothing you feel you want to draw our attention to. Is there anything that any of the members feel you want me to go through it page by page in case you'd drawn attention, drawn your attention? Is there anything that you've drawn?
I'm happy with it.
Roy, was there anything on the report that you felt you wanted to ask questions?
No.
Ian, if you just tell us the page.
Page 45.
If you give us a wee chance to get to page 45, Ian, please.
The question.
You see, you're working on paper, Chair, that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, you see, you know, when you've got a secretary that can run it off and do it all in useful colour for you, why would you? Page 45, please.
We've got Councillor Pearce, isn't he?
Yes. Item 2 on page 45, controls to identify accounts and disclose. I was just interested to see that we have these registers, and I'm wondering where they are and who they're open to. I would assume the pecuniary interests of members are open to everybody, but is that right?
Yes.
On the website.
I think you have to comment.
They are open to inspection, Chair. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not. They're not. You don't just access on the.
They're on the members page.
Yeah.
They're on the members page, but Joe Public can't go in and see that. I think Joe Public has to actually.
If memory serves, that's correct. Yeah, I don't think.
I don't think that anybody
you guys
could go,
can't, no, yeah. you can get to the members area, as Mike says.
Members could access that information because you can go on to the members page.
Yeah.
But Joe Public can't go on to the members page. And therefore they couldn't access. But all councillors are expected to do as is asked here. You should have any interest that you have. And you fill that in whenever you actually,
Correct. Whenever
you become a councillor.
You do it annually.
Yes, we're doing a refresh as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
you do
I understand that it was where it was accessible. I was asking, and then I see that's also the case for officers and managers.
Yeah, I would
imagine. Assuming that isn't available generally, but would it be to a councillor?
I would think that possibly, and somebody can correct, under freedom of information, could a member of the public ask for that?
Yeah,
you know, I think an individual could sort of write in to the chief executive and ask what are Councillor Loughran's registered interests, and then under freedom of information I think that the chief executive would be obliged to give that member of the public what I have recorded.
Yes.
And I think that's the way it would be. Peter.
Is that Chairman that Ecclesfield Parish Council, which I'm the Chairman, the pecuniary interests are on our website. So
anybody can. And the Borough Council.
Yeah.
I rather hijacked this.
No.
It's not your issue, but
no,
it's really quite.
And we all answered it instead of you. But we're just referring to it because these are all, the information to the right hand side, this is all information that our officers have actually given to our external auditors. You know, that hasn't come from Grant Thornton. On the right hand side of the page, the management response is obviously what our officers have told them.
Of course it is.
And that's why, you know, if you feel that there's anything you would like to put to Alar about anything you feel is missing from here, maybe there's a question you think that Alar should have asked you and you haven't asked it.
It's pretty comprehensive.
Well, yeah, but some of you are so clever you might think up a question. So are there any points that any of the members would feel that they would like to raise here?
No,
I haven't.
Thank you.
Right, okay.
Madam Chair, so I've just had a look on the internet to see what you can find for an individual councillor. It gives you the name of the councillor and his profile or her profile, whatever you've written about yourself.
Yes.
It doesn't tell you about your pecuniary interests.
Right. So it's just what you've said about yourself, and that does get updated.
Yes.
Because I know I had
You can't access your assets in the Cayman Islands.
Bad chance and new chance. Right. Right, so that's us. Can I thank you very much for that, Alar? We really do appreciate, you know, what you have done for us in coming along tonight, and thank you for that report. It really is appreciated. Members, thank you very much. We'll move on in our agenda. You're welcome to stay or to go, Alar. Don't feel you've got to stay. If you want to go, then you may. If you want to just stay to the end of the meeting, then you're welcome to do so. We're moving on then to item 3E, and in fact this really is Judith's own item on the agenda, isn't it, Judith? So far Judith has been, you know, sort of doing her duty for her colleagues and presenting information from them, but this is Judith's own. So Judith.
Thank you, Jeff. It is actually my report this year. When it was brought to the council previously, it was actually the Section 151 officer who brought it, but I offered to do it this time around. So since the Audit Commission was published back in March 2015, councils have had a choice about how they go about procuring and appointing their external auditors. You could either do that yourselves, or you could opt into a national scheme. When it was first introduced, the council opted into the national scheme. That one's now coming to an end in March 23, and we're now being asked again, do we wish to opt into that national scheme again, or are we going to make our own arrangements? We have a choice. If we're choosing to make our own arrangements, we can either do it literally on our own, or we can look to group together with a number of other councils and make an appointment between ourselves. But to do that, you have to be set up an audit panel. It can't just be this audit committee, and it has to have independent members appointed to it. The pros and cons are set out in the report, and you will also see at the appendix as the letter from the LGA. They're very much recommending opting into the national scheme again, and as officers, that would be my recommendation to the committee as well. It's a council decision, but we felt it appropriate to bring it to this committee first and for you to make a recommendation onto council about the appropriate course of action. But the one thing I do just want to clarify is, all we're doing at this point is making a decision whether we're opting into the scheme. We won't know until that national scheme has gone about its procurement process which external auditors were allocated. That could be Grant Thornton again, it could be somebody different. We don't have any kind of influence over that part of it. All we're doing is indicating whether we wish to opt into the national scheme. And I've said my preference would be that we do, partly because we don't have the capacity to go through the procurement exercise ourselves, and it's highly unlikely that we'd get a deal that was better than the national scheme that, you know, gets the advantage of bulk purchasing. And actually, there's only really a limited number of firms that are qualified to the standard that they need to be able to do this type of work. It's quite a niche area of work.
Right, Ian, you have your hand up, please.
Yeah, Chair. I just can't see why we would want to layer on the additional bureaucracy and administration and cost involved and going around the way. And it's a 5-year process, 5-year role, is it?
Right, Roy?
I was just going to say, if Judith is recommending the national scheme, as is the LGA, then why should we go against it?
Yeah. I think, you know, in general, that really is the case. Judith, have you any idea of what the other local authorities within Staffordshire are doing?
We haven't had a great response from many of them, if I'm honest. I've spoken to the head of finance at the county council, and I know that they're going to opt in. Mm. And I think most of those that have responded to us, well, actually, anybody that has responded to us has said they're opting in. It's just that we've had a lot of people who just haven't replied. Mm. But I'd be surprised if there are many, certainly locally, that would choose to go their own way. It's certainly a small district for us. We don't have that kind of buying power or capacity to support the procurement of this entry point.
I think Ian's right. Why put another layer of bureaucracy and the cost, which is unnecessary? So I think, you know.
I think then. When did this go to council, Judith?
We're going in January, aren't we?
Well, right, that was the question I was going to ask. I want to see what happened at discussions tonight.
To decide, does it go on the agenda for January?
I think we are in the time frame to get to November, if that suits.
I think members are in agreement that we are going to sort of we're going to opt into the national scheme. So is that agreed, members? Right. Yeah. So we're all agreed then, Judith, that's a unanimous decision that we're going to opt in, and we're then going to move on. So we've actually agreed on that unanimously, and if we move on to the next item on our agenda,
it's page 64.
Page 64, and I think we're coming to you again, Judith, just because the you have opted in for this.
I did, Chair, and I do know a little bit about it. And essentially, this report is just for the committee to know. We're advised to bring an annual report to members around how we deal with these sort of investigations, these use of these special powers under the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act. And it's mainly the regulatory services that would kind of use these powers if they were needed to. And this report really sets out to assure members that we have a policy in place, we have a process, we have officers that are trained to exercise these powers, even though we still need to make an application to the magistrate's court. It's not something that we can just do as council officers. But in reality, the council hasn't used these powers in the last 12 months. So I'd say it just assures we have it there if we need it, but we haven't actually had to use it this last 12 months.
Yeah.
Since 2015.
Yes.
Yes.
It's very rare
Thank you for that. Can I just say, I'm assuming then that, you know, the two officers, in fact, are the head of law and the legal services manager. So they are the two who would actually okay that procedure. So what we're actually being asked to do, members, is we're being asked to note this report, so you're all happy to report it.
So noted, Madam Chair.
Or does anyone feel obliged to make a comment? Right, okay, so we've noted that report. Thank you, Judith. And since, theoretically speaking, we've come to the end of our report, there's one point I would like to raise with you, Judith, and that is an email that came from Stephen, and it was to do with fraud training. And I'm assuming that all members of the audit committee received that email from Stephen.
I think all members and all staff.
Everyone's done it.
But I would like to query that, because I have not done that fraud training,
I
don't remember ever seeing an invitation to do the training before.
I couldn't remember either, but I looked into it and I got it from Barbara. August.
So who did the email come from initially then, Mike?
I think it went from Stephen to Barbara, and Barbara circulated it to us. And I, like yourself, I never reacted to it until I got the one from Stephen a couple of days ago, and I did the course. It's quite a good course, actually. It's quite quick.
So you have done it within the past?
I did it yesterday or the day before.
Yeah.
You do it online?
Yeah.
Well, you do it online, because what concerned me was, as I say, my immediate response was, I haven't seen that before, and they're asking us to have done it by the beginning of October. Well, it's a wee bit late to do it for the beginning of October.
There were two emails that were sent out to everybody, and I think there was confusion, because the one that you want to log on to the course was before the one that asked you to do it. Right, and this, I'm going back several months now, when I completed it.
You completed it?
Yeah, it was you know, as Mike has said, you know, it's a very easy course, because you're basically looking at information, then it's asking you questions, and you answer the questions. And you get a tick in the box if you're right, and if you're wrong, it tells you why you're wrong.
But you can do it again, you can do you can do it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was just to say, I had missed that, but no, I think it's a very...
I think mine must have been geo-blocked. Have you resend it?
Yes.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, it's important.
I was aware of it quite recently.
I think Stephen's issued reminders, because I've had the reminder as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the last couple of days.
I don't know.
No, it came to all members, and I thought it was actually very good that it was coming not only to all members of audit committee, it was going to all members
and to all officers.
I think, you know, that it would be well worthwhile us doing that. So I think then actually we should ask you to thank Stephen for sending out that reminder, especially to folk like me. For those people, those unnamed people who have not done it, thank him very much for the reminder. And all that remains then is for me to say, members, thank you very much for your attendance tonight. Thank you for coming, Ava. I hope you have a safe journey home. Judith, thank you for all the roles you've played tonight. And can I thank the Cabinet Member for coming this evening as well, and also Gareth for stepping into the breach tonight. And Jim, where would I be without you?
Exactly.
Thank you very much. Exactly. At least I can admit it. You know, I can admit it, can't I? Thank you very much, members.
Thank
and have
you
a safe journey home.
You
I can now.